The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
You never really know how much stuff you have until you move. And then you realize you have more stuff than you ever needed in your life. And that is such the truth. So welcome back to The Empowered Homeowner. I am Beth Allen, your host. I am a DIY expert, a contractor, and an educator. And today I am joined by Court Ebling from Carter's Home Downsizing. And I've known this fine gentleman for, what is it, 10 years, I think.
At least, I think, Beth.
Yeah, right? It's been a long time. And he knows how to handle all of that stuff that's in your house. He knows how to handle it. He knows how to get rid of it. So buckle in for a fun chat about all of that stuff that's in your house and how do you make that downsize decision play out a little more smoothly. So Court, welcome.
Thanks, Beth. It's great to be with you here today on this beautiful, crisp fall day. Perfect time of the year to be downsizing.
Yes, it is. It's a great time to start going through our stuff. And Court, I know what you do because we've known each other a while. So
sure.
Tell us, like in the broad sense, what is it that you do at Carter's Downsizing? And also explain where the name came from.
Oh, sure. Well, first off, for those wondering, my first name is Court, and Carter is my middle name. So it's that easy as far as that goes. And I have, Beth, as you know, been helping people, mostly seniors and the children of seniors that have heavy household accumulation, helping them sort through years of accumulation to help them determine what to keep, donate, discard, recycle, and sell. And for the 15-plus years I've been doing this, I've been working with people mostly in an age range of about 60 to 100, with probably the average folks being in their 70s and 80s. Many of them are moving to local retirement communities. Some are going to over 55. Some are moving to Florida. Some are moving to be with their kids. Every single one of these situations is a little different.
Okay. What's the oldest person that you've spoken to?
That's a fun one to talk about. My oldest client was about 4 years ago, and she was 102.
Wow, 102 years old.
And still sound in mind.
Sound sharp as a tack, as
yep,
they say.
That's
awesome. So can you describe a little bit about your service and how it differs from some of the other services that are out there? Because I know you cater to a lot of seniors, but
yes,
you're not senior specific. So, and you're also not the service that you put the stuff on the curb and it just disappears.
Oh, right. All good points.
You're kind of in between.
Exactly. So what we basically are doing is helping people. They've generally been in a home a very long time, and a lot of them need a helping hand, just their handheld, to get through what they have. And so some of what I do is sorting. We also help people with general decluttering. 9 out of 10, these folks are moving. But some of them just want to get a head start on what they're doing. But what we do that's a little different than some of the other folks out there, we help get things of value sold.
Okay.
We bag and box up donations. We help with all kinds of recycling. That's a very broad term. Is it paper recycling? Is it plastic recycling? Is it electronic recycling? So we'll get into that a little bit more later. We also help some people with a local shredder we work with. And then we have multiple other referral partners if there's something that's a little bit out of our realm to help with as well.
Okay. You can cover everything from the hazmat pile to the piano.
Well, pretty much so, absolutely. And I will have some piano stories later.
Yeah. Hey, I have my own piano story. So, but it's really important. And you talked about that you kind of have like a three-phase process that you kind of think about when you do your work.
Yes, and let's talk about that for a moment. And the three phases, some jobs are just one phase, some may only be two, but for what I refer to as a full-scale job, which is a full house where someone's been in there for a very long time, they're not taking a lot with them. One thing for seniors moving into a retirement community or anywhere for that matter, they in some cases are only taking 20 to 25% of what they own with them.
Wow.
Because it's really square footage. Just look at the math. If you're in a 3,000 square foot house and you're moving to a community where maybe it's an 800 square foot apartment, you've got an awful lot that you can't bring with you. And I've seen people bring too much with them, and they called me and said, well, you told me not to bring it all, but we did. Now come help me get it out of here.
Yeah, and as a nurse who used to manage a retirement community, you know, I was the one in the apartments of our seniors and saw the trip hazards and the issues that were created by too much furniture. And having that issue with my own in-laws, they brought too much stuff. You know,
too much stuff is what we hear all the time, and I joke that we help people with too much stuff, or I say we help them find new homes for their unwanted items, which is basically what we do.
Yeah, my father-in-law, God bless him, he's 80 years old, and he wanted to bring his shop vac to his apartment at a retirement home. I'm like, what the heck do you need a shop? You have a vacuum. Like, you don't need a shop vac, but it's in the corner of the closet. But
I've heard of people wanting to bring crazier things than that. And a lot of these communities now have, Beth, interesting activities. Some of them have workshops. One that I do a lot of work with locally, Ann's Choice, has for model trains, a whole club and community for that. So you're not giving up everything that you've loved doing when you're leaving your house. It's just a different lifestyle and simplifying their lives when they go there.
You have a shared work space now.
Exactly.
A shared workroom. Instead of it being in your garage, you've got probably an even bigger, better, you know, workroom.
In some cases,
that's a wood shop. So
that's right.
Hey, if I move into one of those communities, I'm going to be one of the ladies down there in the wood shop for sure.
And I'll see you there.
Yes, I will be hanging out there together. So, Court, can you tell me, you know, who are some of the people that are coming to you? It's not just the seniors. It's, you know, it's the children, right?
Yes, absolutely. That's a very good point, Beth. Yeah. I am frequently contacted by the children of the seniors. And because of the range of the age of people that we work with, this could be a child. I'm thinking of a few years back, a 97-year-old woman, her 73-year-old son. The child of the senior came for my help, and we helped him at his house as well as her house. And then some people a little bit younger, and their children are in their 40s, 50s, or maybe 60s. So most of them are probably in their 50s and 60s. They may have a situation where they live in Oregon or California or somewhere. They're not around the corner. They'll fly in. They'll go through the house. They'll get the important paperwork dealt with. They'll make sure they're getting mom prepped or whoever's in the household, the parents, to move wherever they're moving. And then we come in and help with the rest.
Wow. Well, do you find that you have a lot of deceased cleanouts as well?
We do. And I hate to put it this way, but they're usually the easiest ones because there's people, sometimes there can still be multiple relatives we're dealing with. But those folks just want to get it done to get the house on the market with the realtor as soon as possible, to simplify the process and get the estate cleared up.
Yeah. I have helped with both of those. I have helped with the living relative. I have helped with the relative with dementia. So there wasn't a whole lot of input she was providing.
Sure.
And then I cleaned out my mother's house after she passed.
And
I will say my mother's house had the most stuff, but it was the easiest to clear out because she wasn't there to object to anything, so it did make it easier.
And that, Beth, one of your questions I remember when we were talking a few days ago is what's the average amount of time to clear out, say, a four-bedroom house? It depends who's there, who I'm working with. Am I working with the 83-year-old woman of the house who's still there, or am I working with the 60-year-old child? The children usually want to get it done. The older folks usually have to look at every little thing, and that's fine, but it's going to take a lot longer for me and my crew to get that done. So I will often ask people to do an initial sort of the house. And again, that's going in, making decisions on things. A lot of the retirement communities have someone to put together a floor plan. Now, I don't get into any of that. I know we have some other friends that do, that you're aware of as well. But once that gets handled, I can come up with my team, get it done a lot quicker, generally more affordably, and for the realtor to be happy because once we're in, we're getting it done. And then they can come in and do their magic, getting the home on the market. And that home is going to look bigger, brighter, cleaner. Sometimes we'll leave a few pieces for staging, a kitchen table, a dining room set, something like that. And that's kind of how it goes from there.
Okay. All right. What do you find draws people to make that call versus, oh, I'm just going to deal with this themselves? Like, what is the benefit of calling you instead of the family saying, I'm going to DIY? As much as I DIY, there are times that you got to pass the baton.
Sure. Great question. And really, it's me coming in with an objective point of view. I'm completely non-judgmental. I realize some people that may even be in like a hoarding situation, they got there, a lot of different reasons. It's not my business to worry about that, but to simply try to get them to the next step. A lot of times children get frustrated with their parents and they throw their hands up in the air, and we can come in and very calmly, nicely, politely, professionally walk them through the steps. We're going to have a specific time frame with, again, with the phases and certain days to get things done with, and we're going to get this done quicker. The thing is, I've seen people that I've met, and then they say, oh, we're going to try to do this them ourselves. They call me 6 months later and said, I should have hired you when I met you 6 months ago. Meanwhile, the roof's leaking, the lawn needs to be cut, they're paying taxes on the home, and they got to get their relatives where they need to go.
And they could have been out by then.
Absolutely.
They could have been out of the house and on to the next stage of life. So, yeah, that's important. I know for me, I did do my mother's house myself. My siblings and I, we cleared out my mom's house on our own. But we had a lot of emotional stuff. We had some old wounds that we needed to heal. So for us, it was definitely a cathartic experience, not so much of a stressful one.
Right.
You know, so for us, it was okay. And I knew of your service, and I knew of another friend who has a service, but I was like, I did need to do that for that. But oh yeah, it was exhausting though. The yard sales and all of that stuff. And yeah, I wish there are moments for many of those things. I'm like, I wish I just called Court and had him take all the stuff away.
Sure. And there's, and sometimes we're not for everybody. So after I meet people and I explain what we do, I get a pretty good idea if there might be a fit or not, and then figure out what the follow-up date is, if they'd like me after an initial meeting, which could be a FaceTime consultation or on-site, depending on where they are and what the timing is and who's available. I'll provide a proposal and say we can do, A to Z. Maybe you want to do X, Y, and Z, and we'll do A, B, and C. So, and we also, Beth, will come into situations at different times. Sometimes it's the realtor calls me and, oh my gosh, these people, the house closes in 3 days and there's still three sofas and junk in the garage.
Wow.
So that's where we are just strict junk removal, which is a big part of what we do anyway. But the sooner that they call us, and I think we'll talk more about this later, but the sooner anybody calls us, the more time they're going to have to get things done, the less stressful it's going to be, and the more options there are to make a lot of things go in a lot of different directions, which is, of course, a big part of what we do for them.
It's huge. Court, can you tell us where you are serving? What areas are you working in?
Sure. My main focus is Bucks and Montgomery counties in Pennsylvania. We will go into Northeast Philadelphia. And those are really the main areas. And as my business has grown for the last 15 years, the geographical area has shrunk a little bit, but at the same time, if somebody really needs our help and it sounds like a good fit, we will go a little further.
Okay. And you said you have other partners too that you guys refer to each other.
We do. We have some colleagues in Philadelphia. Somebody needs help there. And I stopped going to Philadelphia many years ago between the traffic and the logistics and where all my resources are. So we have other people to help in that area.
But that doesn't mean people can't still reach out to you, because you can be a referral partner.
Oh, of course.
And you can connect
absolutely.
People to,
good
to
point.
The right
sure.
service provider. Okay. When it comes to the planning of, I know that, I put myself on a waiting list for a retirement community. And I know it could be a year. It could be 6 months. It could be 2 years. When do you suggest people start tackling that four-bedroom house with the packed garage and the basement and the shed?
I'm glad, Beth, you brought that up, because I see instances where someone maybe has a two-year wait, and then all of a sudden something's opens up, and it's 3 months. So the sooner that we start, and again, this could be phase one of the project where we're coming in and we're sorting basements, garages, attics, sheds, the what are usually kind of the easier parts of the job, because those places are frequently just dumping grounds and a lot of it's just general debris. Maybe you'll find something interesting that needs to be reviewed. But the sooner they start, the better, because if you've been in a house, and the funny thing is some people have been in a house 10 years and have more stuff than those that have been in a house for 50 years. So it's how everybody runs their household, what they've kept, are there things that their children have? And that's another big thing that I always want to talk about. If you're offering your children, your grandchildren, your friends, your neighbors, the cleaning lady or the plumber, anything, please give them a specific drop-dead deadline if you're working on a plan and a project where you've got a time frame where you need to get ready either for me or you're getting ready for the realtor, or you're getting ready for other projects at the house. I'll often go in, for example, before a painter because of a room so packed, the painter needs everything out of
exactly.
the room.
Exactly, yeah.
And half of it is either trash or donation, and maybe there's a few things that could be sold or a few things that are going to the kids, but let's let them get it out of there. And the children have used mom and dad's house in some cases as a free storage unit for 40 years, and that's more common than you would think.
Oh, I get that. My son got married in January, and I have all of his holiday stuff and some wedding stuff still in my house.
I'm sure.
And I know it's going to be there until they have a home of their own because right. they're in a, you know, renting a townhouse and it's limited storage. So, but that's the joke is, you know, I have all your good stuff, your extras. So,
right.
I'm going to charge rent now. I'm just joking. But, you know, that's a reality of it. It may not be just your stuff in your house. It could be other relatives' things. And then you have to, like you said, give them a deadline, get it out. Or it might just go out with all the other stuff.
Right. I've seen many cases, Beth, where people, a lot of jobs we handle is people kept parents, grandparents' items. Sometimes they are still in the boxes in the basement from 20 years before. They don't remember what it is. We, of course, want to sort through them and make sure there's nothing, no important documents or jewelry or a coin collection or something like that. But that happens quite often, and a lot of homes just become storage places. And, you know, better in someone's home, though, than an actual storage unit where they're paying $100, $200 a month. But that's just the nature of the beast there.
I was talking with a realtor last week on the show, and we were talking about the storage units. And that if you are seeking a storage unit, you need to stop and check yourself and go, wow, am I just amassing too many things? Like, do I really need that space? Now, maybe you have a small business and you're keeping inventory or
sure.
that kind of
sure.
stuff. But if it's just your overflow of stuff, you know, it's time to cut up the Amazon card, you know, and really think about do I really need this? And I can't need it that much if I'm willing to leave it 6 miles down the road behind two locked gates and, you know, all
yeah,
of that.
All good points, Beth. And again, I'm not knocking the storage unit community because people that are in the military may need to put stuff away for months to years or whatnot. People that are maybe moving and the house sells quicker and they haven't found a house yet need to put stuff in there. Children in transition that are maybe figuring out where they're going need stuff to go there. But I'll tell you, it's not something we do a lot of, but a few times a year, we will help folks that have things in storage units. One time it was an entire unit full of shredding. Literally, 50-plus boxes of shredding was kept in there. Another time I can think of
so
it was...
Was it already shredded?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was business documents that just they kept putting in there as opposed to taking it to a shredder. So we helped
wow.
them, and they were paying $200 a month. So do the math, $200 a month for 5 years, you're talking at five figures, $10,000. So was that really worth storing that there?
Yeah.
In some cases, maybe if it's, you know, with the IRS, you're supposed to save things 4 to 7 years. But in this case, a lot of it could have gone by the wayside and been properly destroyed.
Right.
As opposed
or even
to,
digitized.
That too, in some cases,
and that might have
be
been
done.
a cheaper route.
Right.
But yeah, that's incredible. When you stop and you just did that math, it's like, wow, you're spending a lot of money.
It's shocking. It can be what people can pay, and I've seen people put their kids' stuff in there, and then all of a sudden, months turn into years. And so, anyway, I'm not a big fan of them. They are good for some.
Oh, they
things,
serve their purpose, absolutely,
for sure. Yeah. But it's procrastination and the lack of a decision making process in many cases.
Yeah, but we all know that the procrastination, the hoarding, the commercialism of just buying things,
consumerism
is often a psychological issue. And,
no question.
And so people do need to stop and reflect or check in on their relatives that that's an issue for.
Definitely.
My parents' house was packed with craft supplies. Wood. My mother was a DIYer. I have a garage and a basement that have far too many things. I might need it.
Right. That's what you always hear. And then there's some guys that might have, you know, 10 of the same screwdriver or ladies that have 6 of the same cooking pots or whatever it could be. But simplifying life usually makes things less stressful.
Yeah, that kind of that question of when was the last time I used this?
I like that. And some people say a year. I'll be generous and say 2 years, especially with clothing for a lot of people. Yeah. That can be something that's tough, you know. And don't have your children. That's in one of my top 12 tips we'll be talking about later. But yeah. Maybe have a friend review the clothing with you. A couple of things we generally don't get into deep unless the client asks us is reviewing paperwork. It can be incredibly time consuming, or okay. Going through somebody's wardrobe.
Okay. Now, occasionally, you don't do fashion shows?
Generally, no.
Okay. That would be a whole specialty line item, you know, if you're going to sit through the fashion shows from 1970 clothes.
Yep.
When it comes to recycling, donating, and selling, what are some of the tips that you have for doing this responsibly?
Good point, Beth. And as I said, one of my main taglines is we're going to help people determine what to keep, donate, discard, recycle, and sell. So let me explain that process a little bit. And so any room of anything we're looking at when we're sorting with people is breaking all that down. And so we're not just willy-nilly grabbing things. Oh, maybe you can throw this in a garage sale and an estate sale. We're looking at it. We're making our little piles. We'll sometimes use a garage if the garage doesn't have a car in it. Set up 3 or 4 card tables. Start making our little piles. So we'll have things that could either be sold in auction, through an antique dealer, through an estate sale company. In some cases, we will sell some things for people and credit them against our labor and disposal costs. For donating, there are so many great places in our area that you can donate to. Donation-wise, most clothing is being donated. And you don't even have to worry with clothing if it's really salvageable, because all these places will recycle clothes that are, you know, they have stains on them, they're missing buttons, they're out of style.
That's a great thing. A lot of people don't realize that many of the thrift stores will take the things that maybe aren't up for sale in terms of, like you said, they're a little worn, maybe there's a stain or something, and they recycle the fabric for the value of by weight.
Exactly.
And then they also will send things to lower income countries.
That's correct.
So things still have life even after you go, oh, it's got a stain on it.
Right. So that's something that's important for us. We're real big on repurposing, recycling. A few of the things we do that I think some of the other folks that are, you know, close to what we do, or maybe even not close to what we do, I'll give my vases that we get from jobs back to my local florist, as well as ribbon and baskets. We'll take towels, animal accessories, and things like that for the Bucks County SPCA or other animal shelters. Eyeglasses I drop off at the bank in the box for the Lions organization. And there's just so many different little ways like this that we'll, you know, again, try to keep things out of the landfill. Any unexpired food, there are multiple food pantries we take things to as well, and that we don't even charge for.
That's great. How do you handle some of those tough things? The electronics, the chemicals, you know, the hazmat products.
Sure,
And pianos, things like that.
Yep. Let's start with the electronics. Electronics, I think it's about 10 years ago, Pennsylvania passed a law. You are no longer allowed to put, quote unquote, electronics into the trash. And that's a fairly broad term. So no TVs, no computers, no computer monitors, no fax machines, no printers, no old stereos, nothing like that. So there are a number of, in our area, recycling yards that don't just deal with scrap metals, but they will accept items like that, and that's where those will generally go. Pianos, we were both talking about pianos before. Pianos are a tough one these days, because you can go out and buy a $69 portable keyboard. For many people, a piano, it literally just takes up space now. Younger folks that are maybe in an apartment, they're generally not going to have a piano. Even people in a larger home would rather maybe have a couple, another sofa in a big room than a piano that's just collecting dust. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of sad, because a lot of pianos, unless they're really, really nice or high end, there's really just no market for them. There's more people that are between 50 and 100 that are getting rid of pianos than there are that are 20 to 50 that have interest in them. So,
yeah, I believe that. We had a neighbor down the street who was getting rid of a piano, and I always wanted to have a piano in our house. So, oh my God, it was so funny. Dan was getting rid of his, and it was his grandmother's. We literally wheeled it down the street, put it in the middle of the road. We just wheeled it 5 houses down the street,
That's
up the driveway.
Funny.
no mover needed. I mean, it still needed to be tuned, but it was great. And it was a little beat up, but by the time, you know, my mom passed, we got rid of that piano and it ended up in the dumpster.
Okay.
Because I took the good piano from my mom's house. But
we do work exclusively with a specific piano mover, recycler, dismantler. And if there's a baby grand piano on a second floor, that's one of very few things that we will farm out to another partner. And again, it's just everyone's a different scenario. When I hear from someone, oh, I'm giving that piano to my daughter down the road, I'm like, do you have somebody to move it? And they're like, no, I will give them the name of this company that we work with, and I've never had a bad thing said about them.
Okay, terrific. And about the solvents and paints.
Oh, so solvents and paints. So here's a little trick for everybody. In Bucks County, there are about a half dozen times a year you can take your hazardous type materials, which is gas, it's oil, it's solvents, it's Roundup, all those types of things, to a tech school or wherever they have them. You can look on the PA site and see where they are. You can take those things there. One thing they will not take is latex paint. So yeah. Some people will do this, others don't want to deal with it, and we have a specific place that we take latex paint to if we have to, and then we get charged for it, so we have to charge the client. But you can pop the top of the latex paint, pour half of it out if it's very full, put in either kitty litter or shredded paper, mix it up a little, let it sit 2 or 3 weeks, and then it becomes hard.
Right, so that paint that is in a can that is now solidified can go into the regular trash.
Right, right.
You just can't put liquefied paint in your
right.
trash.
We don't want liquefied paint going in the trash and then the trash truck in your driveway, in front of your driveway, smushing that down, and it leaks and it goes into the water supply, and we have a big mess and a big problem.
And there's good reason why we have to handle those things properly so that
we don't
have any issues down the road. So, while we're talking houses and downsizing and all that, we're going to pause for a minute and hear a word from our nonprofit partner, which is Laurel House, and supporting those that are finding themselves in a difficult situation. Since 1980, Laurel House has been a lifeline for domestic violence survivors in Montgomery County, offering a safe shelter, a 24/7 hotline, trauma counseling, relationship education for teens, court accompaniment, and medical advocacy. But there's more work to do. Together, we can end domestic violence and help families rebuild their lives, whether it's volunteering at their thrift shops, assisting with childcare, or becoming a text line responder. Your time can make a real impact. With training and support, you can become an advocate for survivors in our community. To learn more about volunteering, donating, or simply offering your support, visit laurelhouse.org or call 610-277-1860. Every action counts. Together, we can make a difference. Here's a word from our sponsor, The Showerhead Store. Replacing your showerhead is a very DIY doable project. And I'm glad I added this rain shower head to my morning routine. Crafted with premium chrome, this rain shower head not only adds a touch of elegance to your bathroom, but it delivers durability and a stunning shine. I love the hammerhead dual shower with a 72-inch hose. It is perfect for washing you, the dog, and the shower itself. It comes in a variety of colors and styles, so check them out at theshowerheadstore.com. Well, welcome back. We have a lot more things to talk about, some more specialty items and antiques, because there are those things in our homes that some of us and our grandmothers might be like, I paid a fortune for that piece. That's special. And we're looking at it and going, yeah, nobody wants it. It's 70 years old. So how do you handle some of that and actually finding the things that do have true antiquity value versus
All good points and questions, Beth. And I wanted to mention to the listening audience, I do have a background in antiques, not a formal one, but my parents dragged my sister and I out to a lot of antique shows and things back from when we were not even teenagers yet. And By the time I was 13, I was buying, selling, trading everything from license plates to marbles to antique toy cars and you name it. So I've been part of that world for a long time, and the antiques world has been changing dramatically over the last 10 to 20 years. And a big part of this is simply the shift in demographics. So the older somebody is, the more they're going to remember and probably have had or liked or loved their Hummels, their Crystal, their China sets, and all these types of things. And I just do my best to soften the blow with some older folks when they say, well, again, I paid $1,000 for this China set. Well, you can go look in Facebook Marketplace or eBay or a number of places and see people that are selling a whole set for $25 to $50. And of course, there's always exceptions to that, as there are to everything. But we have to explain, you know, you've loved this, you've enjoyed it. Maybe one of your, you know, grandkids wants a few pieces, or, you know, we're going to donate this and there'll still be somebody that will like it. They just probably won't pay a whole lot of money for it. So what we want to unbury in a house when we're sorting is the more marketable, more sellable items, not just the general household stuff, which quite honestly, 7 out of 10 houses we're working in, that's all that they have. So coin collections, are there silver coins or gold coins in very rare cases? Firearms, guns are always selling. Interesting antiques of certain kinds, jewelry, sterling silver flatware sets, artwork with a real artist's name attached to it, not a duck print they made 50,000 of in 1982, and things like that. So the thing is the younger generation, they're more interested in an iPad, an Audi, a paper plate, and a microwave than they are in doing anything with grandma's old items and collectibles. So again, this does not mean we are just pitching these things, throwing them out or whatnot, but more than likely a lot of those types of things could be donated or sold for pennies on the dollars, as opposed to, unfortunately, bringing in the money that they remember paying for what they are.
Yeah, and I think part of it is that there's that generation that you're serving, many people didn't have a lot.
That's correct.
And the things that they had were really important to them, and they valued and they saved up. And these were significant purchases to be able to make. So it wasn't just buying, you know, a $20 item, you know, at Target or Amazon. It was, I saved up. I had to wait 3 months, and maybe I did layaway. You know,
sure.
There's different emotion world attached to some of those items, and it's great that you guys are able to step back and be cognizant of that as you help them part.
Absolutely, for better or worse, and in many cases, it's unfortunate. But we live in a disposable society. You need a new phone, you're recycling the old one, you're getting a new one, as opposed to, you know, keeping things for a long period of time. And it's just where we are in a society today, and we do our best to work around that and keep everybody happy when we're downsizing with them.
Yeah. Speaking of phones, do you know of any resources to get rid of cell phones or to repurpose cell phones?
Sure. I believe Staples will take them back. And again, some of the recyclers we work with will take them as well. I do recommend to people to make sure that the quote unquote, the hard drive on the phone, if you could even call it that, is cleared off, that all their contacts are removed.
Your stuff is off of it. Yeah.
Right. No pictures or anything like that. But that's just a small piece of the whole big puzzle of all the electronic recycling, but certainly something to think about.
Yeah. I heard somebody say to me recently, I forget what the conversation was about, but they said, you know, there's no U-Haul hitch on the back of a hearse.
I've heard, it's funny you say that. I've heard that expression recently, and it's correct. And the stuff that you love and I love, or our kids love, or our parents love, everybody has different tastes and interests. And some people like a lot of stuff or have a lot of stuff. Others don't. We even in some cases have worked with hoarding situations. That's extremely challenging in a psychological situation. If the person who is the quote-unquote hoarder is there, generally they are not there when we're working with them. But it's fascinating for me going from, you know, we work with 50 to 70-some people a year, and some houses you're in and out of in a few hours, and others were there for literally days or longer.
Wow. Yeah, you forget about the deep connection that we have with our stuff.
No question.
You know, we are connected to our things.
Definitely.
So does your team, do you do some of appraising or research to find out what things might have value, or do you have appraisers and more, I guess, formal antique dealers?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I have a go-to auction house that has an appraiser. So, and here's a perfect example. Just in a couple days, I'm meeting for a second consult with a client that a gentleman's deceased, and the executor is having me come out with my auction partner to look at a large collection of sports memorabilia.
Oh, wow.
So when there's something that's, you know, out of my league, but something where I believe I need help with or need someone else to come in to handle, we'll talk to the auction partner. I sometimes take pictures to send to antique dealers for people or an estate sale company. And it really is based on the types of items, Beth, the volume of items, the quality, and, you know, what all this stuff is to figure out the best place for it to go. And again, that's why I say we make things go in a half dozen to a dozen or more locations based on what it is. And that's just one of them. Because if there's something of value left, we want to make sure that the client gets their fair share of what that value is, however it's going to be sold.
Right. So all that stuff that's in your garage, like you said, it can end up in 8 different locations.
Absolutely.
And the manpower and the legwork for the average child of an aging parent, that's a whole lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and it's not only do they not know what the value of certain things are, but they just don't simply know where certain things can go if it's electronics or how to deal with a paint or, you know, what size dumpster do they need for the project or whatever it is. And with me doing this over 15 years with my crew, we have a whole process of how to do all this and where we're going to start. You know, we might go up to down. We might go down to up. We might start in a shed. We could start in a garage. I'll sometimes like starting in a garage to make room in there for things coming out of the house that maybe are going to go into our vans for donation or an area to put things that we have an antique dealer or somebody that's going to look at a little closer.
Right. So when it comes to some of the things that you have found in the house, are there some crazy items that you've looked at and you thought, oh, these aren't, you know, valuable or important? And then you find out, wow, this was like something of value? Or do you kind of have a gut already?
I have either a gut or from doing this as long as I have, I got a good idea if we need to, you know, pass on the picture or whatever it may be to somebody who's going to have more knowledge. And again, the auction houses, they deal with the value of the stuff every day. We're not only dealing with that, but we're dealing with the debris and the recycling and the donations and everything else. So
you haven't found any Van Goghs?
No Van Goghs yet, but yeah. And we found some crazy things that in a G-rated podcast like this, we're not going to mention, but And every time you think you've seen it all, the next week you see something you've never seen before. So it's fun. It's almost like a treasure hunt, and you just never know what we're going to find and then what is the appropriate thing to do with this, you know, unusual item if we find it.
Right. I don't know how it started, but many years ago, somehow we had this thing about baby doll heads. And I don't know, you posted something about Halloween or whatever. So every now and then, if I see like this creepy baby doll, I'll send him a picture. I was like, oh my gosh, you're going to open the closet in some house and find these weird baby dolls.
And vice versa. And, you know, we found like old rubber Hummel dolls in an attic. And because of the severe temperature changes, they just turned to dust.
And really?
Attics are a tough place to store things because there's very few things that are going to do well in an attic in the type of a house where, you know, it gets to be 120 some degrees in the summer and, you know, zero in the winter because of severe temperature change. One thing that I think of just off the top of my head a couple times is I've seen ski boots, like the plastic ski boots from maybe the 70s. They're just a pile of dust because the temperature's changed so much and the chemical reaction makes them. You wouldn't even know what they were, but you see the little buckles right there.
Oh, my gosh.
An attic's not necessarily a great place to store certain things, but that could be a whole nother discussion.
Wow. That's kind of crazy. Well, I just have to do a shout out. He has such an eye for things that are useful and repurposeful. Every year I do a charity project for homeless people in the city of Philadelphia, and he reached out to me one day, and he's like, I have this dollhouse, and I know you redid a dollhouse. He's like, do you have any purpose for it? So I was able to take this beautiful dollhouse that Court found in a home, and I rehabbed it slightly because it was in pretty good shape, and I sold it in an auction for $300.
Yeah, that was great.
It was great. And then I was able to use that, and I'll never forget, I bought like giant cases of sweatpants, you know, to distribute down in the city.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing you do, Beth. And that client, when I explained to them what this was going to be, you know, used for, they were thrilled, as most people are, and something like that that wouldn't necessarily have a high value, but they're helping those in need and really is happy to do it. And I remember the 1 year I worked for a dentist, and I gave you all those toothbrushes too. So
yeah, again, I still have some.
Oh, good.
There were so many toothbrushes right. that Court gave me that we've been doing this homeless project for like 6 years, and we still have some.
That's great.
We still have some that are left. But it's just making sure that things that do have a second act end up being able to perform.
As much as possible.
You know, is really important. So when it comes to the logistics of how you're going to deal with the stuff, we've talked a little bit about dumpsters. How do you go about? What are some of the guidelines?
Yeah, good question. This is something that many homeowners just really don't even know where to start here. So let's talk about this for a minute. I have a couple different people, haulers that I work with for dumpsters, one almost exclusively. They have 15, 20, 30, and 40 cubic yard dumpsters. Okay. So an average house for someone that's been in the house 10, 20 years is probably going to need a 30 cubic yard dumpster. That's probably the standard average size you'd see at like a job site as far as size and space.
And we're talking the big rectangle dumpsters, not the kind you see like at the back of the restaurant. We're talking
Exactly. This is something that is when we're working with a client, if we feel we need a dumpster as opposed to us hauling thing, if it's a full-scale project, people generally do need a dumpster. Not everybody, but a lot of people do. There are boards put down in the driveway, so when the dumpster goes down, it doesn't mess up the driveway, and we're cautious about where it goes so the homeowner can still get their car in and out of their garage if possible. Most dumpster companies will let you have the dumpster for 7 to 14 days until you have to pay extra. And the prices, I don't want to say they're competitive. It's such a competitive industry. They're going to be pretty close if you call company A or you call company B.
Okay.
But one thing we do that I always recommend to people if they're doing the job themselves is you want to pack that dumpster like a puzzle so you're not throwing random stuff in that's just going to take up more space. And we can save literally 30% more space by doing
that.
Wow.
See, and that's why you hire somebody like you. If you have no Tetris skills,
good point.
You know, you need somebody like Court to come in and literally pack that so you're taking full advantage of every little space that you have. But 30%, that's a lot.
It can be significant. And we're going to know when I get there and I do the walk through the house, which is something we haven't really talked about as far as kind of my process. I hear from a realtor, retirement community, or a previous client's friend or somebody that calls me, and I either FaceTime them or meet them at their home. After I complete an initial walkthrough, attic to basement, garage, shed, backyard, I'll have a pretty good idea. Do I need one dumpster? I just did a crazy job in New Hope a few weeks ago. We had 440 cubic yard dumpsters.
Wow.
And nobody can even believe it, but I have the pictures to prove it. So, but I'll know what we need. And sometimes between our cargo vans and trailer, we'll just haul smaller amounts of trash out if it's nothing significant. But a dumpster is often the way to go. And I don't want to say anything bad about the bagster people, but that's very, very small footprint. It's about 3 cubic yards of stuff.
Okay.
So that's maybe
more like a remodel project.
Exactly. There's a small remodel project. There's a little bit of scrap wood, old siding or something to go in there. That might be appropriate for that. But you're not going to fit a lot in there if you're truly downsizing and you're getting ready to move to a new location.
Yeah. Plus, I think the lack of structure in the bag, you know, makes it a little harder.
That can be hard sometimes, too.
I like
too,
the hard corners of that container.
I agree with that.
Yeah, we literally broke up a piano and put it in a dumpster, and it was sad to see it go, but it was the only thing.
Done the same here, unfortunately. Yeah.
Now you did say that some people will take pianos and make art out of them, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I've seen being an artist myself as well, and I'll sometimes save strange things to repurpose with some of the 3-dimensional artwork I do. But I've seen people use the keys. I've seen them take the harp out of it. I've seen them use the top part of a baby grand. Now, that's, not going to happen real frequently, but again, it's just another matter of repurposing.
Yeah.
And, we've got all kinds of friends from artists to woodwork people, the mechanics. So sometimes people are like, I don't care what you do with this stuff. If you can find a new home for it, great. We give a lot of things away. They're maybe not kind of quote-unquote donatable. And while we're talking about that, Beth, we have a very good idea at this point about what is or what isn't donatable.
Okay.
I know one of my main donation partners now will not take a china cabinet because of the glass. And again, it goes back to the younger folks not caring about Hummels and crystal and those kind of things. Most particle board furniture, which can be anything from a desk unit, like a computer type table, to a bookshelf, to a little desk or something, they fall apart real easily. Yeah. They won't take those. Unfortunately, a lot of those IKEA pieces are going to be dismantled and put
all
in
those
the trash.
Things that came with an Allen wrench to assemble typically aren't going to be welcome at
the
thrift
store. That's
easy
for you to remember that name.
Yes, yeah. You know, if you needed an Allen wrench to assemble it, it's probably not of value. And,
right.
You know, and for people to know that if you have a piece of furniture that has dovetail drawers and, you know, like you start going, oh, wow, this is a higher
quality.
That's
pretty piece. And that's going to outlive us probably if it's taken care of. But, you know, upholstered sofas that the cat scratched or someone spilled coffee on that are older, wing chairs, easy chairs that, you know, the leather's all bad. These aren't things, unfortunately, we can donate. The donation folks want something they're going to be able to take, put in their store,
and
sell for the organization to make money for whatever charity they're supporting.
Yeah. So it has to be not just safe and functional. It also has to be aesthetically appealing.
Serviceable condition and good condition.
Like you said, it has to be desired by the people who might want to buy it. And
right.
if it's stuff that people aren't interested in, then
exactly.
it's just going to sit. So when it comes to doing some of the shredding and dealing with the paper management, how do you handle some of that? Because I can imagine there's a lot. I mean, my mom had phone bills, paid phone bill receipts from 1985 from Belltel.
My oldest tax receipt, Beth, to date was from 1956, from several years back. But this is my opinion on shredding, and everybody has a different one. If there is a Social Security number, if there's a credit card number, you definitely want it shredded. If it's old tax documents that you don't need that are over 7 years, you want them shredded. If it is a phone bill or a Comcast bill or whatever it may be, people have differing opinions on that. But if you don't have a lot of it, as far as shredding goes, we work with an accredited shredder. They have a truck. They will physically show up in your driveway. We sometimes, for clients, will put, and I refer to the volume of shredding in banker boxes.
Okay.
So if you have, say, 15 or 20 banker boxes, they'll come to your home. They take the banker boxes. They put it in one of those big plastic 96-gallon trash cans that dumps into the truck. It is literally shredded in your driveway.
Okay.
And I recommend that. If you have 1, 2, 3, 4 shredding boxes, you might even want to look. There's a lot of banks and other businesses that will have a quote-unquote free shredding event, and maybe that makes more sense. And then, you know, many of us have recycling services at our home where you just, you know, throw the paper into the can. But it's just going to depend. Some people are, you know, more concerned over others about identity
right.
theft, and so it's really a personal thing. But I like the shredder coming to the house if there's 10 or more boxes, because then I don't have to haul it for the people and charge them extra just for my time of hauling it. And then they see it done right there and they have peace of mind.
Yeah, it's just, like you said, the comfort of seeing all my stuff has been destroyed. We're good to go.
Right,
it's gone.
And that's just another, you know, little part of the project that we do that many other people don't.
Yeah. Because there is a lot of information on some of your papers. Like you said, if it's a phone bill, I mean, you know, unless it is the credit card
and
information.
And anybody can look up on the internet where we live or whatever through home sales or whatever. So
there's a lot of stuff that's not so private anymore.
That's correct.
Yeah. So have you found any old documents that actually have value, like old newspapers and, you know, treasures, things?
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. So for two perfect examples, when Kennedy was unfortunately assassinated in 1963, I think every person on the planet
saved a copy.
The United States, anyway, saved a copy. Same thing for Man on the Moon. Same thing when the Phillies won the World Series in, you know, 1980 for the first time, then 2008. So there's a bazillion of these things out there. In general, they're not going to be worth a whole lot. There could be, if you have old autographs, antique pictures that go back to the turn of the century, and things like that, there can be interest in, and it's condition and it's subject matter. If there's a photograph of a Civil War general, that's going to be worth a whole lot more than just the family sitting in a chair with a baby, for example.
Yes, the classic family photos.
Right.
Yes.
Those are things that we look at, again, along with all the other antique and quote-unquote items of value to figure out where they should go if there's something that could be sold.
Okay. Yeah, that's – I'm just thinking about some of that. It's interesting that those old newspapers, like you said, it all has sentimental value. But if everybody had them, if they were such a plenty, then – there's no real dollar value assigned.
Sure, and just because something there were a lot made of, it's like just because something's rare doesn't mean it's valuable. Just because something's old doesn't necessarily mean it's valuable, and especially less today. But
I mean, we're not of value, even though we're getting older. Come on,
we have a lot of value here.
We do. We have a lot of value. When you are talking about helping people move to different communities, you said you're a preferred vendor. Can you tell me about that?
Multiple local retirement communities like Ann's Choice, Pine Run, Penswood, and then in the realtor community, I've been a preferred vendor at a large local Keller Williams real estate office in Doylestown and a number of other ones as well. So they have people we've helped over the years that are happy with our services, and we have references, and we're insured and all that good stuff if anybody's ever questioning any of that.
That's awesome. One of the things that you and I had talked about was you have your 12-step program, kind of your 12 tips for helping people downsize. So let's tackle a few of those things. And the first one you have on your list, which I love, is not to do it all in a day.
It's a big rarity. Anybody who get it done in the day is the most minimalistic, organized person that there probably ever has been, because most of us have – you got to go through the food in the pantry. Are there any expired cans? Is there stuff in the garage? Is there stuff here or there? Realize when you're starting and embarking upon the project, this isn't the kids flying in and usually just a weekend getting things done. It's multiple days. It's multiple passes through certain rooms to go through stuff where you're getting rid of the obvious trash at first. Then you're looking at donations and you're leaving anything that's maybe furniture that would be moved to a retirement community where you've got a floor plan for. And you got to think about, what are my favorite things that could go with me that are appropriate? Like you said, why do you need a shop vac when you're in an apartment where they vacuum the floor for you and you don't have a garage or whatnot? So,
yeah, I think, in that case, I think it's just connecting back to that independence of
there's lots of reasons for that.
Yeah.
No question.
You also advise that we need a deadline for our loved ones to pick up their pile.
Yes, if there's one thing everybody gets from our time together here and for them to remember, if you have, children, grandchildren, friends, neighbors, whoever, give them a specific drop-dead deadline, especially if you're in any kind of a schedule, which you should be if you're moving in 2 months, 2 years, or 5 years from now, to either come get the items and remove them or specifically mark them. And I brought with me here today something that I love using, Beth, which I can show everybody. This is blue painter's tape. It will not damage wood, metal, furniture, whatnot.
Love painter's tape.
Put the blue on it, and you can write, Joe, Jamie, Fred, whoever's name would go on there. And that's one way to kind of start the process as well, and then make lists room by room. And that's going to help people, because I generally, and anybody that does anything even remotely what I do, don't like working with anybody until we have a good idea what's coming and what's going. Now, we may be helping making with some of those decisions or making some recommendations, but that's going to be something. And a lot of times kids are far away or they don't have a place to put. I was with someone last week. Their kid lived in an apartment in Brooklyn and they got a whole room full of stuff. I'm like, I don't know where this is going, but the realtor's getting this house on the market in 2 months, and she wants every room in the house completely cleared out. So where is it going? Is it going to go to an unfortunate storage unit? Is it going to go to mom and dad's basement, which is the free storage unit?
Right.
Or do they only want 10% of it, or do they want 90% of it? So a lot of
things. So sort and tag.
And
deadline. Sort, tag, and commit.
Yep,
okay,
absolutely.
That's good. You also suggest working in 3 to 4 hour blocks, which is great.
Yeah, I find when I'm sorting with people that after 3 or 4 hours, they become bleary-eyed, especially, older folks. But, if you're just going in a closet and working for 10 minutes, it's going to take you years to get the project done. Really, truly dedicate some time or a room. We're going to do this room today and that room tomorrow or next week, because if you don't, you're just never going to get anything done.
Couple other tips that is on his list is giving yourself grace for your emotions because you're going to have to work through some. Pick a room that's less emotional, which I feel that. So, like, you start in the kitchen and the garage, not the bedroom or the photos and the family room and, and all that, and the clothes. Love using the garage as a staging area. So clear out the garage so then you can have that place to set up your tables and sort, which you talked about.
Yep.
Enlisting the young bodies, huge. Get the younger people to be hauling and,
right. And if you want to embark upon the project or part of the project yourselves, don't be, you know, think you're going to run up and down the stairs 100 times carrying stuff that's too heavy or going up into an attic where it's hot or dusty or whatnot. Get the kids, the grandkids to help with some of that, and that'll save you some aggravation.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we really kind of hit on everything else here, and just such wisdom and insight. You don't have to tackle this project alone. This is something that many people don't even realize that there's services like courts that can come in and help you tackle this monumental task of clearing out 50, 60 years worth of life. So, Court, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, and everyone, happy downsizing.
And again, doing it yourself doesn't mean doing it alone.